Welcome to the fourth and final part of our Georgia-Florida special on the Savage Pads podcast. As always, I'm your host, Doug Battle. Parts 1, 2, and 3 featured Ben Watson, Arthur Lynch, and Mecole Hardman. And in Part 4, Georgia-Florida legend Richard Samuel is joining us. For those of you who don't remember, Richard put the team on his back in the 2011 Georgia-Florida game, played the game of his life, and carried Georgia to their first win against the Gators in years. We'll talk about his mindset ahead of that game, as well as the changes that enabled the 2011 team to right the ship after a tough home loss to South Carolina. Then, Corey Amick will join the show for a special SEC Spooky Season segment, which will involve the roastings of Florida, Tennessee, Georgia Tech, Alabama, and of course Auburn. And in a more serious segment, Corey and I will then discuss how Georgia can break the backup quarterback curse against Florida, and we'll break down each team's areas of advantage going into the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. The Dogs have a big one coming up. We've got a great show coming up. Stay tuned.
Practice every day.
Man, oh man, mano a mano.
He definitely 6 hour miles, me and myself, as close as we have right now to rope on.
When we score, I honestly did not know where I was for about 5 seconds.
Early on, you could see with Jake, you know, just like with Fran talking to.
Maybe one of the most underappreciated quarterbacks in the country.
And we got to keep feeding the running back.
I don't think we've yet to see the tight ends.
I think Georgia does a great job bringing pressure on third down.
Turn around 2 weeks later in the SEC championship, we look like a completely different team, and we made them look like a completely different team.
I mean, it's hard to get emotional thinking about it.
And it was my job to kind of get outside the corner. And
as soon as I let it go, I knew it was good.
From that point on, I kind of began to trust the Air Murray. He is my quarterback.
The kid is just special.
I was famous. He was onside.
Everybody respects his specs.
That's what every Georgia fan should hinge their hopes on.
Alabama and Georgia are the best two teams in the country.
I feel like we are the true running back you.
I have great confidence that we're going to see the personification of Georgia football.
Welcome to the Savage Pads podcast. The hero of Georgia's 2011 victory over Florida is with us. Richard Samuel, thank you for joining us.
Oh, yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, Richard, before we get to that 2011 Georgia-Florida game, I want to give you the opportunity to tell our listeners of your journey up until that point. Can you walk us through your time in Athens and the numerous position changes that led up to that 2011 season?
Gotcha. Yes. Coming into Athens, getting recruited either running back, linebacker, decided to stick the running back role. I was excited about it, excited to see how my career, my future would go as a running back since I played both ways in high school. So coming in, I was, of course, Norshawn was there. It's hard to get a lot of playing time behind such a great athlete as Norshawn.
Right.
But after he left, Caleb and I ended up working out. I got the starting position. Halfway through the season, lost the starting position. I was now the backup. So I feel like, you know, up until that season, my career was going up and down, then transition to linebacker. Who knew I was going to end up being a linebacker? Just figured that, hey, I felt more natural. I can flow natural, go downhill, make hits, make plays. Let me go give linebacker a shot because, you know, running back, for some reason, I just wasn't getting it right.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, I did linebacker. We had a few running backs. I think it was, Carlton Thomas. Rashawn Ealy.
Yeah.
And that's when Isaiah Crowell was coming in. They said, well, hey, Rich, you know, you're the only veteran guy that we've had at this position. We have young guys coming in and guys that haven't played. We need a veteran running back. So I decided, you know what, to help the team out. That's what the team needs for me to go, step back to running back. So what the crap, you know, it ain't gonna hurt anything just to go help the team.
Right.
Even though I still felt the pull to the linebacker position.
Yeah. And you had invested a year at that position redshirting, is that right?
Yes, I did. And I was there for the off season. I was there off season during camp, and then had a torn meniscus during camp, but I was able to still come back and practice the whole regular season. They decided just to let me redshirt that year.
Yeah.
So during the whole off season, I was still playing as a linebacker. Didn't convert back to running back yet.
Okay. And it must have been tough to learn a new position for an entire year, or practice in that position and prepare for a certain role. As a former five-star recruit and as someone who likely foresaw a different kind of experience at Georgia than what actually ended up happening, how were you able to put the team before yourself time and time again?
To me, it came natural. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to do what I personally can do to help win or help the team win. You know, I didn't think of, I don't know, I guess I just never had the mindset of, hey, this would be better for you down the long road.
Mm-hmm.
Now, going to linebacker, I was thinking, well, you know, I'm not doing much to help on offense. We had a couple guys in there. My playing time has dwindled to almost fourth quarter playing. So I'm like, okay, I'm not useful. Let me go at another position to be useful. And that's kind of what led to me going back to linebacker. The team, the coach, Rick came and said, hey, we need you at this position. So, I mean, I'm here thinking, well, if the head coach said we need me, I guess then I'll be able to contribute more at that position instead of trying to find a home, either offense or defense.
Mm-hmm. And you did end up helping the team win a very big game against Florida, and we're going to get to that in a moment. But I want to talk about that 2011 season a little bit leading up to that point. After early season losses to Boise State and South Carolina, many Georgia fans were calling for Mark Richt and or Mike Bobo to be fired. But as Georgia always seems to do, you guys played your best football when your backs were against the wall, and you positioned yourselves to take the SEC East lead with a win over Florida. How was that 2011 team able to stay focused amidst a rocky start to the season?
That team, we had a fight. That's one thing that 2011 team did. Yes, we had an ugly loss to Boise State in that first game, but they stick together. Those men that in the 2011 team, we all knew we had to stick together, we had to rally, because we had a goal, and that was to make it back to Atlanta at mm-hmm. the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we did to continue driving, push through those losses. I mean, the best team wins on certain days, but we were determined that we need to make sure every time we line up or we strap up, it's our day that mm-hmm. we're going to be the best team on the field.
Mm-hmm. And just like this year, Georgia's SEC championship hopes were contingent upon a win against Florida. Now, while Florida was a 500 team at the time that season, I want to remind our listeners that Georgia had lost three straight to Florida at this point. Richard, can you tell our listeners about the mental hurdle you all had to overcome to finally supplant Florida as the top dogs in the SEC East?
Yes, we have to stand up and prove, like, we're Georgia. We're not just a typical, hey, we're going to roll this team just because we beat them in the past 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one thing that when you looked in everyone's eyes pregame in the warm-up, everyone's eyes was zoned in, focused. It wasn't no distraction. It wasn't a lot of playing around. A lot of the guys that made plays that helped contribute to that win, they were zoned in. They were focused on their job and what they can do and how they can do their job to the best to where we can get a cumulative win.
Mm-hmm. And on that day that you had the game of your life, you were in the same position as many of Georgia's current former five stars, a position where you didn't even know how many snaps you would get, if any. How did you mentally prepare for success in situations where you knew there was a chance you wouldn't even have the opportunity to have it?
That's a good question. That game stood out a lot. I feel like my mental preparation was different.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why it was that different for that game. But the only thing I keep remembering as I was going over the bridge towards the stadium was be prepared. And I envisioned myself at certain levels because I did a lot of special teams. Even though I wasn't a lot of running back, I did a lot of special teams.
Mm-hmm.
So I was envisioning myself making plays on special teams, making plays on the tackle, on the kickoff, making plays on the kickoff return. I envisioned myself making plays at each position that I'll play. And I just so happened that the way I envisioned how hard I was running, how successful I was running, make sure I hit the right gaps. When they call my number to make those same plays, I've already mentally envisioned it being happening, so it's just time to actually physically do it.
Mm-hmm. And you did end up seeing the field quite a bit at running back in that Florida game. But throughout the game, you and Isaiah Crowell really had to fight for every yard in what was mostly a defensive battle, until on one late fourth quarter drive, it seemed as though Georgia sensed some cracks in Florida's defense's armor. Richard, can you walk Dog fans through that drive that cemented your place in Georgia-Florida history?
Oh, man, that was an amazing drive. Mm-hmm. One thing that Dog fans may not know, because, you know, I was the one that scored, Bruce Figgis, he was a fullback. We had a play that he should have actually scored that touchdown, but I think either he dropped the ball or it was a busted play.
Okay.
So we was running the ISO to the right side of the field, and I guess Coach Bova saw that that side of the defense was just crumbling. There's always a hole. We pop 5 or 6 yards every snap. Linebackers wasn't tackling. Our offensive line was moving there. Defensive line off the ball. So Coach Bobo, hey, blood nose football, just keep pounding straight at.
Yeah.
And every time, five or six yards. No one really. It was mostly shoestring tackles, or let me push you over. And I just kept hitting my gap, kept reading my blocks, and I knew. Based off, like I said, my vision, I knew I was going to do something. And that something was when he kept calling the plays. I was telling myself, Richard, you have to get in the end zone. We have to win this game. You have to get in the end zone. And just vision is keep happening. And Bova kept calling the right plays.
Yeah.
Sooner or later, we popped and scored.
Wow. That just had to be surreal, crossing that end zone and in that stadium and that atmosphere for the game-winning touchdown against Florida. First time in 3 years.
Yes. Yes, it was so. I mean, at that moment, I didn't realize the magnitude of it because mm-hmm. I was just thinking, we got to win. I want to help us win.
Right, you were just doing your job.
I was just doing my job. My job is to get the ball and cross the end zone line.
Uh-huh.
So I focused on my job, and I did my job the best that I could.
Yeah. Well, last question for you, Richard. Having seen all those years of work pay off in that single performance and even a single play, what would be your words of advice to any of the former blue chip guys who are waiting for their opportunity at Georgia right now?
I would say mental preparation is more powerful than most people give it credit for. You mentally prepare, which is a physical ability. Yes, guys, you got it. Yes, you may not be the top of the best, but if you're able to mentally prepare and you're able to execute your position at the best of your ability, you're going to do something. Yes, it may not be the best, but you're going to do something that's going to get some attention, or it's going to be that one key block to where we open up and make the touchdown, or that one key tackle to where you read the right gap and you shot it and make the tackle. So mental preparation of your job, your responsibility, so when it comes time for you to actually do it, you don't have to think. It's a second nature. You just react.
And
that's the main thing.
Yeah, and I am curious. I know I said last question for the last one.
You're good.
When you say mental preparation, what was your formula as far as preparing your mind for success, and what does that look like? Is it meditation? Is it just visualizing success? What exactly do you mean by mental preparation for the players?
It's first to start with knowing what the responsibility is.
Mm-hmm.
If you know that, hey, from an offensive perspective, if the defense have a certain lineup, knowing who you need to block, knowing who you need to cover back to, or knowing, hey, my lineman's going to shade to the right and then move up to the next level.
Right.
That's first. You got to know what you're doing in order to get on the field to execute. The second thing that I've done was I've always watched a lot of running backs on YouTube. I used to watch Marshall Faulk, Reggie Bush, Deuce McAllister, just different running backs that played at a high level and then just made plays. And just watch how they made plays. Watch how they slow press to the line of scrimmage to, you know, hit the gap. Watch how they squat down to come out their hips to make the block. So knowing my responsibility and then watching other guys at another level execute doing the same thing that I'm supposed to do and just see how they do it, study how they did their craft. And that's how I mentally prepared myself for the game.
Right. Well, Richard, it certainly paid off for you in that Georgia-Florida game and paid off for all of Dog Nation. We appreciate the selflessness that you displayed throughout your career at Georgia, and we also appreciate you taking a moment of your time to share your little bit of your story with us and to, you know, share some of that game with us. We wish you and your family the best. Go Dogs, Richard.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Go Dogs.
I'll be a dog till I die.
All right, and now it's time for SEC Scaries with Corey Amick. Corey, it's Halloween, as you know. Well, first off, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Dad. Glad we're finally in spooky season.
Yes, it is spooky season, as you know. And I thought it would be fun to come up with some ideas of what we could dress up as to scare each of Georgia's rivals. And got some help from our Twitter followers on this one. But since it's Florida week, let's start with Florida. If you're dressing up for Halloween and your goal is to terrify a Gator fan, what costume do you wear, Corey?
All right. If I'm trying to terrify a Gator fan, I'm going to dress up as none other than Jim Harbaugh. So since 2016, Michigan and Florida have met three times in bowl games. So Florida beat Michigan last year pretty handily. But I imagine this season especially, every Florida fan is terrified of yet another matchup against Michigan, since that would mean they fall short of the playoff.
Plus,
who wouldn't be terrified of those khaki pants leading Michigan's spooky offense this season?
Yeah, that's not one that I thought of. I did see on Twitter our follower Brad Golden tweeted out that a healthy Felipe Franks is a costume that would terrify Florida fans.
That's good.
I think Jarvis Jones is another one. Also think in the offseason you could have dressed up as the transfer portal. But what about Auburn, Corey? What do you think for Auburn?
For Auburn, I'm dressing up as a five-year contract extension for Gus Malzahn. So,
what does that look like?
Well, I'm imagining like one of those million-dollar checks, except it's a contract extension.
Right.
And the check itself is wearing a sweater vest. But I think every Auburn fan low-key knows that Gus will never get them back to their prime, and he'll continue to have like a few seasons of 8-4, randomly go 10-2, and then followed up by like a 6-6 season where they lose to teams they shouldn't. And
right.
I think they're definitely scared of a contract extension that we all know is inevitably going to come.
Yeah. I put Terry Godwin as one of mine for Auburn because Terry almost went to Auburn. He turned down Auburn for Georgia last minute. They thought they had him. He goes to Georgia. And then in the SEC championship game in 2017, he scored a touchdown and a two-point conversion. And then last year, he had a crucial fourth down touchdown that really helped us run away from them. Another guy I put on there is DeAndre Swift with the dagger touchdown in each of our last two meetings, both that SEC championship game and last year's game in Sanford Stadium. So hopefully we'll see another one of those this year. And one more thought I had for Auburn before we move on is a blue chip high school quarterback recruit. They have a history of only having success with transfer quarterbacks, and it's actually amazing to look at the quarterbacks who have gone to Auburn that were 4 stars and 5 stars. Kyle Frazier was supposed to be the next Cam Newton. Sean White, Jeremy Johnson, now Bo Nix. And there's a handful of guys in that whole stretch that have not worked out.
So here's a question. Should Terry Godwin rebrand himself as the real Scary Terry?
Ooh. Especially for spooky season with him being such a nightmare for Auburn fans.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're calling him Scary Terry the rest of the year. But we do hope to have him on the show. And I will, if I do get Terry on the show at some point, I will ask him about rebranding, like a personal rebrand. So maybe we'll see some Scary Terry. Next team rival, this one should be fun, Georgia Tech. What would you dress up as to scare some Georgia Tech fans, Corey?
All right, mine's kind of a microcosm of this season for Tech fans, but I'm dressing up as an even number. So those nerds are trying to bury the fact that they lost to Temple 24-2. So they literally scored 2 points in a football game, and I played hockey, which can be a scary sport.
Sure.
And, you know, two goals, it's a good amount of goals, but leaving two on the scoreboard in the football game will haunt you for a long time. So I think any type of even number is probably going to trigger a Georgia Tech fan and probably scare them a good bit about just the Jeff Collins era so far.
Yeah. Someone on Twitter said, I'm trying to find it here, that they were going to dress up as like the Citadel's mascot.
Yeah, they'd be taking overtime.
Yeah, the triple option. So, yeah, I think the Citadel, I think that one was pretty funny. My pick was Mark Richt, especially now, you know, he had a heart attack. You could kind of have like some kind of hospital theme, Mark Richt. But if he were to come out of retirement, I think Tech fans would be scared. He was like 13-2 against them at Georgia. Unofficially, their field is named Mark Richt Field.
Yeah.
All right, Corey, I know you said you've got a good one for Alabama, and I'm really anxious to hear this. What are you thinking for Alabama?
On the football side of things, I would dress up as Chris Davis. You know,
ooh,
kicks it, probably yikes. The best play ever. And I think that still haunts Bama fans and probably Saban in his dreams at night.
Yeah. You know, it haunts Kirby because he wouldn't kick that 60-yarder against South Carolina. And I was saying,
right, yeah.
He was on that sideline. He's not letting that happen.
A tip for any person in Alabama or around the country that might dress up as Chris Davis to scare Alabama fans. It's not a good idea to paint your face a different color. That's
right.
Not. Yeah.
So no, that's something.
Just a disclaimer.
Yeah. That's a good one. Good heads up there. I just want to, you know, not encourage our listeners to accidentally be a racist. Yeah. My pick for Alabama, this is another one where I have several. I think being a goalpost would be pretty scary. Due to their kicking woes that have gone back for Nick Saban's entire tenure at Alabama. So I think just dressing up as a goalpost, like maybe you being the pole, or maybe having, I don't know, you'd have to have some kind of poles going upward, but I do think that'd be a fun one.
Well, it could be like one of those like donkey suits where like one person's the back leg,
yeah.
One person is the front. You just have like two people standing up tall and then one person holding themselves in like a plank in between, all wearing like a neon yellow what are those things called, morph suit.
My next one, and this one would be a good one for some of our female listeners out there, Trevor Lawrence.
Mm.
I actually know a girl that goes to Clemson that could definitely pull it off, but all you gotta have is that long blonde hair, you know, a little headband and the jersey. And my last one for Bama is a retired Nick Saban. some form of like elderly retirement home version of him. Last one, Corey, your former team, Tennessee. What do you dress up as to scare your old self, the ghost of yourself?
Oh, man, I have a few. First one that hit home to me personally was I would dress up as 2006, I believe, Vanderbilt quarterback Jay Cutler, who ended like a 23-year drought for the Commodores beating Tennessee in Knoxville. And I was at that game, and I remember just thinking the world was over. And
right.
I also didn't know who Jay Cutler was because I was like 8.
Yeah. The thing about Jay Cutler is he probably didn't even care. You know, they won the game.
Yeah.
He was just there because he had to be.
Yeah, definitely not. So that's the first one that comes from the heart. But in general, I would say dress up as Lane Kiffin, because I really believe that Lane Kiffin is the guy who sent Tennessee into this downward spiral that they can't seem to get out of. And so in Knoxville, he's known as like the Lane train for how he just came and went. And what's funny is he named his son Knox, but I'm pretty sure everyone in Knoxville hates his guts. So yeah, I would just dress up as Lane Kiffin.
Along the same lines of Lane Kiffin, I think intern Butch smoking a cigar would be pretty solid. Intern Butch Jones for Alabama, former Tennessee head coach, smoking a cigar, victory cigar.
He would have paychecks coming out of his pockets that are written from the University of Tennessee.
Yes, wait, that is a good one. But Corey, early in the year, we practically had an entire segment every week where you would just come on and roast Florida. And they were a laughingstock all offseason. Dismissals, transfers, recruiting losses, not to mention really embarrassing social media content. And they started the season with an ugly win over Miami, followed by an ugly win over Kentucky. We wrote them off, but we did not take into account what terrifies every Georgia fan, and that is the backup quarterback. And that's what, if I were dressing up to scare a Georgia fan, which I would never do, but I would be a backup quarterback. Kyle Trask hasn't been spectacular, but he's been a game manager who excels at getting the ball to his playmakers while taking care of the football. More of a prototype Kirby Smart guy than Dan Mullen guy, but he's gotten the job done. And Georgia has fallen to backup quarterbacks, Tua Tagovailoa, Jalen Hurts, and the South Carolina backup whose name escapes me. In recent memory, though, those are the three that we've lost to recently. In your opinion, what will Georgia have to do to break the backup quarterback curse against Florida?
So let's first consider our history against the backup. So until that South Carolina game, The only backups that had our number were backups that came in off the bench.
Like mid-game.
Mid-game. So I think, like, Kirby, you know, week in and week out, does a phenomenal job of game planning against an offense. But, you know, regardless of who's the coach or who the players, having an entirely different threat coming out of nowhere off the bench catches any defense off guard. And I think, you know, that happened worst case scenario for us on, like, the biggest stage, being in the SEC championship game and then in the college football playoff. So I think, like, if we just leave it at those two, you can kind of look at it and be like, you know, it's happened twice and it just sucks because the backup was basically as good as the starter, if not better. And that happened both years when they switched places. But when South Carolina came in with Ryan Helinski, who we know was going to be playing and we knew he was a backup, and they came in and beat us, then that's what kind of threw a wrench in our whole, maybe it's not just us.
Yeah, but also in that game, to be fair, Helinski even went out, and it was the other guy that was finishing the game for them. Not that he contributed as much as Helinski did, but...
Right. Yeah, totally agree. And I think it's like, the defense, we talked about this a while ago, but the defense didn't lose the South Carolina game, the offense did. And I think if our defense doesn't give up that one, you know, long toss over the top, like, early in the first quarter, then, like, we easily win that game because South Carolina has no confidence they can move the ball. Like, we're not down a touchdown. And then as bad as our offense was that game, we'd probably still pull it out, you know, I don't know, 17-16 or something like that. But the fact that that did happen, I think, like, the only thing our defense needs to focus on against Florida is just not giving up a big play. So whether that's just having Richard LeCount and J.R. Reed just sit back and play deep cover, you know, we have to help our corners out that are getting beat on these, like, just quick go routes to the outside and these, like, deep balls that quarterbacks are just basically lofting up, and they have a pretty decent chance of getting under if they get a step on our cornerbacks.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I would love to see our defense not play safe, but just play smart against Florida, because I think we can easily contain their offense unless we give up the big play. And that's what scares me the most about a backup quarterback, is whether we just don't respect them for having an arm to do that or whatever reason. But I do think that, like, we just have to play the deep ball against Kyle Trask.
Yeah, and with what you said earlier about the second quarterback coming into the game being the one that's really given Georgia problems, at least in the two Alabama games, keep an eye out for Emory Jones. He was a big-time recruit. Georgia actually recruited him for a stretch before we ended up taking Justin Fields. But he's the second guy at Florida. Every time I've watched them this year, he has run the ball. But in high school, he had a great arm. And I feel like they've been saving him up for you know, maybe a trick play where the defense is anticipating more of a run and he actually airs it out. So I'm a little nervous about him, mostly because he's a second-string quarterback for them. But while Florida may have an advantage by having a backup quarterback playing in this one, there are several areas where I would say Georgia holds the advantage. I want to walk through each unit, starting with quarterback. Corey, given what we know about Trask and Jake Fromm, who do you see having the advantage in this one, Georgia or Florida?
And I think we for sure have the advantage here. One thing I question is, I think Kyle Trask can win Florida a game, whereas I think our offense sets Jake Fromm up to not lose the game.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see if either the play calling changes or just the way that the game progresses allows Fromm to actually win this game, rather than just, like, giving him the opportunity to not lose it by, like, checkdowns and just playing it safe in the passing game. I think he's, you know, 100% a better quarterback and knows the game better and can read defenses a lot better than Kyle Trask. I know that the whole game, they're just going to preach the narrative that Kyle Trask hasn't started a game since his freshman year of high school or whatever, but, you know, he's still a Division I quarterback and he's still going to play well, I think, and he's lived to the moment. So I give us the advantage in that round, but it definitely depends on what Coley does with Fromm.
Mm-hmm. What about offensive line, Corey?
Well, I wonder if this will be the week they finally let off of the, you know, how big and tall everyone is on our offensive line, but
they won't.
You know, I think we do have an advantage up front, even with, you know, on the opposite side of the ball with some of Florida's edge rushers coming back. I still give our offensive line, like, a leg up on anyone they face just because of how well they play together. And I do think that we need to kind of figure out who we're rotating in and out, because we've been like switching around Ben Cleveland a decent amount, and I don't know if that's good or bad for the line or if it's just based on needs of injury or fatigue or whatever, but I would like to see us have like a consistent five out there the whole game against Florida to see how they really do against a good front seven. I haven't paid too much attention to Florida's offensive line this year, but I mean, they didn't do well against Kentucky, which was a while ago, but they still allowed Felipe Franks to get beat up, and then, you know, eventually Kyle Trask took a few hits, so that would give us the advantage, but I would like to see our front seven, especially our front four, like make a statement this game for getting to the quarterback, because mm-hmm. Nolan Smith's done a good job. Outside of that, I feel like we've struggled to get pressure on the QB this year.
Yeah, and speaking of front sevens, how do you feel about Georgia's front seven as opposed to Florida's? Which one do you think will cause more havoc for the other team?
Well, I think this question honestly kind of depends on our game plan. I think that if we come out and do what we did against South Carolina, then I think Florida's front seven has the advantage to disrupt our run game and then cause us into like a scramble for how are we going to pick up yards throwing it to receivers who might not be able to get open. Mm-hmm. So I honestly do think that Florida has the advantage when it comes to the front seven, just because we're going to play into their strength. If we come out with like a better game plan and spread it out a little bit and get some runs to the outside to open up that middle of the field, then I think we put their front seven kind of handcuffed and either focusing on our passing game, which they might not see as a threat and we might surprise them, or they just go all out on the run and that opens some things up outside. So I honestly think that Florida might have an advantage just in the mm-hmm. interior solely because of the way that we play the game. I think our front seven will be fine against their offensive line and against their backs. Our linebackers have looked great this year, and especially in like a coverage standpoint, I don't see us having any big mental lapses in like the linebacker area as far as a running back coming out of the back foot or anything and getting his beat around the outside. But I would say the secondary is more where that concern would be.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with what you had to say about the front seven. I think, first off, Florida's been very impressive when I've watched them this year. They have a very good front seven. I think Georgia's more talented, yes. But I think with the way they're coached offensively and the way we're coached offensively, I feel like we play into their strengths more than they'll play into ours. And that's why I would give the advantage to Florida on that one. Skill positions, wide receivers, and running backs. I feel like Georgia has the advantage at running back, whereas Florida does at wide receiver, more so because of experience than pure talent. But what are your thoughts on that, Corey?
Hey, I totally agree. I think coming out of the backfield, like with the number of threats that we have, we're going to clearly have an advantage there. The combination of the threats that Florida has at wide receiver against, I mean, it's not a lack of experience for us at the corner position because, like, Stokes played his whole freshman year pretty much. Yeah, so, I mean, if we get a guy like Tyson Campbell back out there, I feel better about our matchups on the outside, but I do think it's just a combo of lack of experience and just a little bit of a talent mismatch on the outside for us. Just with Florida having like guys who have been in their system for, you know, 3 or 4 years at this point. I don't think it's going to be an extreme liability, but that is like when we talked about earlier, not giving up those deep throws over the top. Mm-hmm. I think that like having Richard LeCount and J.R. Reed like pinch off those deep throws and play that deep, I think will go a long way to help our back four out. But yeah, I would say from a wide receiver standpoint, Florida has a little bit of an advantage. But coming out of the backfield, especially with Sean Davis, he said he's a normal running back to me. He's quick. You just have to play him like an average running back. You know what I'm saying? So, and what's funny is that DeAndre Swift actually liked the post. Right. So, you know, yeah, Rapoport, then he saw it. The last time someone talked smack before the game, DeAndre Swift had them have to be helped off the field after he broke that, you know, that open field kind of like Z route right in the middle of the field and then just ran down, popped the guy, and he was on the ground for a while. So I don't think that was a good move by Sean Davis to give DeAndre Swift whatever extra motivation he might need. But I definitely like our backfield in this game.
Yeah, I actually think the quote there was taken a little bit out of context because I did see the full quote and it was much less disrespectful. But nonetheless, DeAndre Swift saw what DeAndre Swift saw, and I would not be pleased with that if I were a Florida coach or a Florida fan. So hoping to see Swift do it again against Florida. So yeah. Last unit that I want to talk about, we've talked about both lines. We've talked about the quarterback and the skilled players as well as the secondary. Special teams is something that has won and lost us games in the past. Georgia's an interesting team this year because we're really solid kicking the ball, and we've had such a hard time punting the ball. Would you say advantage Georgia or Florida at the special teams?
Well, with segment? You know, Felipe Franks not being able to play, I'd say Florida is clearly in a disadvantage when it comes to punting after we watched him punt that ball to seal the Miami game.
Yes, you know, into the crowd. Yeah.
Yeah. Got a but you know, but on the real, I would say I think Rodrigo is probably going to have like the best latter half of his career this season. I think I don't know. A guy like him after a game in the South Carolina where like it wasn't his fault at all that he missed those two, like the first one being blocked and then that second one just this is accumulation of we should have lost that game to begin with.
Right. You shouldn't have been in that position.
Yeah, so I do think we're going to have to rely on Rod to win us a game or two the rest of this season. So I feel confident in that as far as us having an advantage there. I think Camarda's definitely picked it up this season punting. It's just every now and then he has one that goes for 33 yards. And then that, already sets up our defense in a tough position to take on an offense with a short field. So I think if he can just keep his average what it should be as far as getting those punts 45 yards down the field and at least getting a opposing offense back to their 25 or 30, then I feel really confident in our special teams to handle that. If we do just have a shank or something just out of the blue, which has happened, then that's what scares me as far as if it is a close game and we give Florida this easy field position, as good as our defense is and as good as they're probably going to play, that's just not an ideal situation that I think would be a disadvantage for us there.
Absolutely. And we've seen that so many times this season. Jake can absolutely boot the ball. I mean, he was the number one ranked punter in high school for a reason. And it's just been a matter of consistency. I'm hoping that some of his more recent successes have helped him with the mental side of the game, get him a little confidence and get him used to having success.
Yeah.
Because the way he was punting earlier in the season would absolutely be the kind of thing that could cost us this game. You give Florida, 15, 20-yard punt, and they had the ball on their own 35 or whatever going in, score a touchdown.
Yeah.
If it's a low-scoring game, which is what I personally expect, that's the kind of thing that can lose you the game. So I'm nervous about the punting, confident about the kicking, and it seems pretty even as far as us having the strength on the OL, them having the strength on the DL, them having strength at receiver. We have strength at defensive back. I think this game's going to come down to turnovers, as so many games do.
Yeah.
And I'm really hoping that we come out on top with the turnover margin, because I think that's what's going to separate one team from the other in this one.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think if you look at the past few years, we've absolutely owned the turnover margin. And I think
thanks in part to Felipe Franks.
Oh yeah. I mean, he's probably committed 85% of those turnovers. But I do think that if the Savage Pads come out at least two times on Saturday, then I see us, as long as we aren't giving the ball away, I see us, taking home the win in a close game as well. So I'm excited for it.
Yeah, can't wait. Well, Corey, as always, appreciate you coming on and blessing us with both your snark and your football expertise. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah. Are you excited for the possibility of NCAA 2020?
Yes, Corey. When it comes out, we are live streaming our first game together. Georgia versus Georgia with one of us will have Stetson Bennett at quarterback, though. The other one will have Jake Fromm. And I'm definitely going to run a more open offense, more aggressive.
Yeah.
It'll be fun. It'll be fun just to live out that fantasy of the team playing the kind of football you wish they would play.
Right.
Yeah.
I have a few quick takes on NCAA 2020 with the possibility of it.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm here for it.
First one is, I literally feel like if in 2014 and all the years before that, if EA would have just given every player a free copy of the game, none of this would have ever happened.
They would have done it, yeah.
I think that's all it would have took to just be like, hey, you get a free copy of NCAA each year, and the players would have been like, all right, cool.
Being on a video game would be enough for most players to want it to happen.
Yeah, so, yeah, we'll see where they go with that. But another take is, do you think it's a coincidence that the week Kanye releases a gospel album, the NCAA suddenly repents of all of their sins against players and opens up towards a new agreement with EA Sports?
You know, Corey, I did not make that connection, but it all makes sense. Kanye is waking everyone up to the real issues in the world, and that has woken EA Sports and the NCAA to the need for NCAA 2020. Hope to see it. Also, hot take here. Cover athlete Rodrigo Blankenship.
Oh, I mean, there would be no better way to bring the series back.
Yeah. I think if you're on the cover, I would buy a copy for like every square inch of my wall.
Oh, yeah. Well, you remember back in like 2013, 2014 when you could basically Google like any player's name
and there's like cover. A fake cover. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we could literally make one for like every player on the roster. Honestly, that's a recruiting tool is you put. Here's a guy, for example, you know, LSU commit, the coldest to ever do it, Crawford, who I think his last name's Crawford, but that's actually his name,
sick
the
name.
Coldest
yes.
to ever do it.
The coldest.
You know, you put him in an LSU uniform on the cover in NCAA 2020, it's like, bam, shoe in.
Yeah, they need to hire us for recruiting at Georgia. So if you're in the Georgia Athletic Department and you're listening, need more creative ideas, we are freelance.
Creatives.
We're free agents. Yes. No, we're consultants. We're recruiting consultants.
Yes. And then, Doug, my last thing is I'm just imagining like a 43-year-old man going in and changing all of the settings so there's no penalties, there's no offsides, anything like that. All the sliders are all towards the home team or whatever. And then it's Tennessee versus Georgia State, and it's just some pissed off dude just playing that game over and over every day, beating Georgia State like 200-0 just to try to get over it. So
just to make a point of how easy it is. I like it, Corey. I like it. Well, we shall see, but I appreciate you bringing that up. That is a very important topic here right now. So, Corey, as always, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Nick.
Yep. All right, and that wraps up our fourth and final installment of the Georgia-Florida special. If you haven't had the chance to listen to parts 1 through 3, Ben Watson, Arthur Lynch, and McCall Hardman each had great things to say both about this current Georgia team as well as their careers. Give those interviews a listen. We'll break down Georgia's performance against Florida and look ahead to Mizzou in our next episode, so keep an eye out for that one. And of course, if you're on your way down to Jacksonville or St. Simon's Island, please drive safely, be loud, and lastly, go Dawgs.